Health freedom and medical freedom has been a bit of a buzzword, especially in the past year. It's the concept that individual human beings deserve the right to decide what is given to them to take internally, or given the right to opt in or opt out of medical procedures. Unfortunately, a lot of people think that this is just a way that people can avoid taking medical interventions that they think are appropriate for all people. But medical freedom not only respects our bodily autonomy, the idea that I get to choose what is done to my body, but it also encourages lively scientific debate about the potential risks and benefits of different medical interventions. I personally believe that it's critically important that we discuss the concepts of medical freedom, because it's not just about to take a vaccine or not. There are parents being accused of abusing their children because they don't commit to chemotherapy regimens for their children. Health Freedom for Humanity is an organization of advocates, parents, teachers, actors, veterans, doctors, lawyers, and friends who stand for health freedom for all people. This is not a political movement. It's not a religious movement. It's not based on any socioeconomic background or philosophy other than that health choice is a basic, fundamental human right. It is important that we discuss and understand the long-standing history between big pharmaceutical industry and the government. It has led to overreaches in many people's opinions and violated their basic human right to refuse a medical procedure, medical coercion, or restrictions based on medical choice. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. If you've been struggling to feel your best and feel like that food, sleep, relaxation, none of it is truly working, maybe you need to up your game with some infrared light and negative ion therapy. Infrared light penetrates deep into your body, going through your skin to muscles, nerves, and bones. Infrared light then helps to boost local circulation, bringing oxygen and anti-inflammatory molecules, as well as flushing away toxins. Therefore, infrared heat has been shown to reduce muscle pain, joint pain and stiffness, arthritic pain. It also helps to reduce stress and fatigue and supports the immune system. Negative ions act as attractors to bacteria and allergens in your environment, and they can help to inhibit free radical oxidation as well as reduce exposures to heavy metals, viruses, and other harmful elements, and can help to balance the body and the mind. The Amethyst Biomat is specifically designed to help provide infrared light as well as negative ions by electrically charging a mat full of amethyst crystals. It truly is an amazing experience to lay on a biomat. I have one as well as the tourmaline and amethyst pillow, and they have become part of my daily relaxation routine. If you want to get one of your very own amethyst biomats, head to lindseyelmore.com/biomat and you can be on your way to relaxation and less stress and fatigue throughout your day. Head to lindseyelmore.com/biomat to shop now. Jeff Weitzman is a filmmaker and a health freedom activist. He has been harassed and censored by the federal government and corporate media at every turn for telling the truth and standing up for people's rights. Jeff is the president of Health Freedom for Humanity, which is the fastest growing health freedom movement in the world. His recent film, Beliefs and Stories, has become a revelation on what is possible as we take media to the next level. Beliefs and Stories explores the ways that emotional and spiritual issues play into disease. Jeff Weitzman, welcome to the Lindsey Elmore Show.
Hey, Lindsey, how are you?
Oh, I am so well, and I am just honestly so proud of you and the work that you have done in the past 20 months. You started an organization called Health Freedom for Humanity, and it has skyrocketed because people see through what is currently happening. All of the things of being told, like, you're going to lose your job if you don't take a vaccine. Everybody under the sun has to wear a mask. And you're like, no, no, no. We deserve the rights. It is a basic, fundamental human right to be able to decide what is done to your body. So talk to us about Health Freedom for Humanity. Why did you start it? What does it stand for? And how are you shifting and changing the course of human history right now?
Well, you know, to be honest, I got in on the ground floor of Health Freedom for Humanity. It was actually started by a guy named Alec Zek. And then Alec invited me to be a part of it. And initially, I was just on the board. And then this last spring, I was able to go into Sprouts Farmers Market stores without a mask. And they were like, sir, you have to wear a mask. And I was like, well, actually, I don't. And here's the law. And, you know, the federal law is 21 U.S. Code 360 BBB-3, which states that we have informed consent and the option to refuse any emergency use device. And those are the masks, the PCR test, and the vaccine. And so I just went about my business knowing that I'm not asking for permission from anybody. I'm living my life lawfully. And yeah, if they have a problem with it, then they should go deal with it.
So
I went to the checkout stand and they tried to falsely imprison me. And I said, are you trying to falsely imprison me? Because the guy was standing there in front of it and he stepped away. And then he told his cashiers, don't ring him up because he's not wearing a mask. And I said, that's okay. I'll pay cash. So I just laid the cash on the counter and walked out. And he was like, hold on, we're going to call the police. And I was like, well, great. Call the police. I'm going to stick around for that. Mm-hmm. So the police came, they wrote me a ticket for trespassing because that's what the Sprouts manager wanted them to do. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, we're not going to do anything against this guy because he's within his rights. But if you want to do something, that's on you. And the manager's like, yes, write him a ticket. So 2 weeks later, the district attorney dropped the charges because obviously, you know, it's not a thing. So then I went, the sheriff's called me and said, don't go back into that Sprouts again. You got off the hook this time, but you're lucky. And I called the sheriff back and I said, oh, I absolutely am going back into Sprouts. And by the way, you're going to defend me because it's your job to defend the Constitution. Went back into Sprouts. And now the manager's like, hey, what are you doing here? I was like, well, the charges were dropped. That's what I'm doing here. And then I said, do you know why the charges were dropped? And he got on his phone right away and started calling corporate because he couldn't figure it out. And then he started running away from me. And I was running after him with the camera going, the charges were dropped because they're illegal. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I just kept doing it over and over and over again until finally the CEO of Sprouts made a very public announcement. This was before any mandates were ever dropped. And he made a public announcement saying no more mask mandates for any shoppers nationwide.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. And Alex Zek at that point, he said, you know, there's all these high profile people out there, you know, that are in the health freedom business. Nobody has accomplished what Jeff accomplished over the last month. And he's like, Jeff, I want you to be my partner now in Health Freedom for Humanity rather than just being on the board. So I'm going to take executive director status and you take president status and let's do this together. And it's been so exciting to work with Alec because it's almost like we just doubled our power. Mm-hmm. Alec Zek is an amazing visionary and he's 29 and he's young and he's just, you know, lighting a fire underneath a group of people, you know, that are his age. And so it's really nice for both he and I to function in different age spectrums and see that we're all on the same team. And what's even crazier to me is I don't care people's sexual orientation, their ethnicity. I've never felt closer to other human beings that are completely opposite from me than I have in the last year. And it's like, oh, so this is what life is really meant to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Not all these divisions that, by the way, we don't want the divisions.
Nope.
They're being created in the media every day because the way the media makes money is to light a fire under people to get them to react. It's a complete reactionary system. If you don't react, they don't make money.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they come out with a story that says, wow, Jeff Weitzman just sat down with an employee from Sprouts who was mad at him for going in there and shopping without a mask. And now the two of them got together for tea and they're close friends. They're no longer on opposite sides of the aisle and they actually love each other. That story, people would be like, oh, well, that's way too nice and loving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's not going to make us any money. So in my experience, that's what's going on right now is that there's a whole bunch of love going on out there. And it's just pathetic that the media and like whatever that number is, 70% of humanity doesn't get it.
Oh, it's very frustrating. You know, just last week, a woman that's been following me for many, many, many years reached out to me and was like, you are so dangerous. I can't believe that you encourage people. She's basically saying, I can't believe you encourage people to think for themselves about what the current situation is. But I also know that a lot of the people that are my followers, they feel so helpless. They feel helpless not to send their kids to school without a mask. And I'm just like, so many people have asked me, like, how do you go into stores without a mask on? And it's like, you walk in the store. That's it. And now, especially with, I mean, the insane government vaccine mandates for military personnel, our agents, our federal agents, it's terrifying to me that people can't understand that you don't have to use these experimental drugs. And now we see the whistleblower from Facebook telling us exactly what you just told us. Facebook is intentionally trying to make you angry all day, every day. We also see the British Medical Journal whistleblower from Pfizer. Pfizer falsified their data to get this emergency use authorization. And it's like, guys, yes, Pfizer has had criminal lawsuits against them more times than just this. But what do you do? What's your advice for a mom who's listening right now, who's being told that her 4-year-old, her 5-year-old has to wear a mask to go to school. And she's like, I can't quit my job. I'm trying to support my kids. And also The other big group that very much concerns me is the military, the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, all being told you either do this or you are out of a job and you may be dishonorably discharged because of it. Quick aside, I remember when I was in pharmacy school, we had a research design class and I was like, okay, we're going to be testing this drug on the focus of different pilots. And we're going to use military pilots and this and that. And my professor stopped me and he was like, why did you choose military pilots? And I was saying like, well, they've got a job where they very highly have to focus and this and that. And he said to me, those aren't the kind of people that you want to experiment on. They're too valuable. They're too valuable a group. So what advice do you have for people who feel like their backs are against a wall right now?
Yeah, I mean, first thing we have to realize is there's some people we can negotiate with and other people we can't. And the military is very tough to negotiate with right now, as are the airlines. Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to have to do is remove ourselves from certain parts of the government system that no longer serve us. And we have to move into the private sector. Now, having said that, there's a lot of states where people can fight mask mandates. And here's how people are having success. And this is also with doctor's offices. They negotiate up front. And what they do is they write them a letter and they say, all right, so the federal law on any emergency use device is we have informed consent and the option to refuse. And that federal law is 21 U.S. Code 360 BBB-3. So since that's the law, my child will not be wearing a mask anymore at school. And if you want to know any, if you would like to tell me how you want to accommodate that law any other way, I'm open to hearing about it. And so then, you know, the child, the inevitably the school writes back to the parent and says, well, we have to follow CDC guidelines, to which the parent then writes back and says, yes, but guidelines aren't law. Only law is law.
And the CDC is not a lawmaking organization. Like the CDC is there to tell us like, hey, these bug sprays work really well. You know, like that's not what the CDC is about. They're not a lawmaking organization.
Indeed. So laws get made in legislatures. A president can't make a law. A governor can't make a law. And so none of these mandates right now are legal. And so once people understand that, it helps them to go, oh, okay, well, then I'm in the right. All right, well, now I can really move forward. So let's continue this. So then the letter comes back saying, well, we follow CDC guidelines. The parent writes and says, yes, but guidelines aren't law. So again, yeah. Show me the law that supersedes 21 U.S. Code 360 BBB-3. And then they say, well, we're a private institution. It's private property. We can do what we want. Well, no, actually, you can't beat up an old grandma on your property, can you? Because we can arrest you for that. And that's just a little thing to give you an idea of understanding that you are not above the law, even if you're on private property. So then once again, here's the law. How are you going to accommodate it? Mm-hmm. And we just keep doing that until they finally surrender and they go, okay, you know, and in some cases they've said your children can walk in without a mask. That's fine. And in other cases, they've said, we're getting rid of the whole mask mandate for everybody in the entire school. And so it's really just a process of wearing people down right now, you mm-hmm. know, and getting them to the point where they understand that law is law. And again, we're not debating science. They'll say, we have to do this because there's this horrible virus. It's like, okay, if the virus was truly as bad as they say it is, then the legislatures would be making law. Why have no legislatures made any laws? Well, the answer is because they know it's unconstitutional, number one. And number two, there is no threat right now. I know they say there's a threat, but they don't even have an isolated virus. The recovery rate for children is 99.97%. The recovery rate for 80-year-olds, I think, is, you know, it's like 95%. So really 80 years old and older, these are the only people with weakened immune systems that are struggling at all. So for anybody that's under 60 years old, everything's so slim that that's the reason why legislatures haven't made any laws. So again, we're back to, if we can de-escalate things and now the problem with a lot of this too is that schools are right now are getting paid like $50 million a year to enforce mask and vaccine mandates. And so that money's so red hot, they can't give it up.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're doing now is we're exposing that. Mm-hmm. We're exposing the fact that they're taking money to enforce illegal behavior. Just bring it right back to the law of you're breaking the law. And so I want to get your response on that, and then I'll tell you more about what we're doing.
Well, I remember when I was living in New York City, New York is one of many, many states that has an anti-mask law. It is illegal in New York State to wear a mask because it's a danger to society. It makes crimes more easily committed. It makes child trafficking easier. It makes crime and criminal behavior so much easier. And I would go to these places and be like, hey, there is a law on the books that you're asking me to break. And I have had the police called on me at the Hertz location. And I was like, guys, like, all I'm doing, I'm going to be in here for 5 minutes for you to hand me a set of car keys and then I'm out. And so we're being asked to break the law, which is kind of crazy because I have just been astonished how many people are just, they're like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll wear a mask for a year and a half, even though I'm not sick. And I also just, that concept of any mask will do is shockingly, like, just so far away from what science is. Look, if everybody who is infected with something or is exposed to someone who is infected is wearing a properly fitted N95 mask, that's one thing. But I mean, I used one scarf. It's like 7 years old. It's never been washed. And that was my mask. And it's interesting. I had a similar experience to you where they're in the checkout aisle. And this woman looks at me and she goes, ma'am, the next time you come and shop with us, could you please try to remember your mask? And I looked at her and I was like, I didn't forget it this go round. Like, I didn't forget it. It's just, I think the concept also that is so confusing is this idea of asymptomatic spread. Asymptomatic spread is not really a thing. I pushed on people so hard. When in your entire life have you been worried about picking up a cough, a cold, a flu, any kind of respiratory illness from somebody who is not coughing, sneezing, actively giving out virus? It makes absolutely no sense. It is just, it's just astonishing to me. And so that process of wearing people down is hard. It's very, very hard. What gives you the inspiration to just keep at it and keep going? Tell us about what is it in your past, in your history, that has made you say, like, look, this is my life's work and I am going to show up and do it.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, as a child, it was a very, very chaotic, crazy situation for me. And my role was in the family was de-escalation. So I had to de-escalate the crazy. So I've already got this calm persona. The next level I had to go to, Lindsay, was to try to find love for these people that are trying to impose their will on me. And the first time I tried to fight it, I was at a farmer's market and, you know, this guy said, you have to wear a mask outdoors at the farmer's market. It's like, no, you know, if you want to, I'll wear a face shield to compromise with you, but I'm not wearing a mask. And he called the police over and had the police escort me out of the market. And I was like, are you kidding me? And that was the lowest moment just about publicly in my life where I was screaming F-bombs and I will sue your ass and all this stuff so loud, everybody just hid their heads in shame. And that was the moment for me when I realized, oh, I guess I'm the problem. Mm-hmm. And it's not them, it's me, because I haven't figured out a way to tap into God and the power of the universe to overcome this. And that's when I realized that I had to find love. And I have to love these people. And I pray that when I leave my house every day, God, help me lovingly educate those in darkness. If I don't say that prayer, I react. And when I react, it's not good, because my trauma response is that I want to brawl. I want to fight. And so now I've learned to channel that de-escalating, fighting persona into a love machine that can say, I want to love you for who you are and what you can't see, and I want to help you. And what I've found is this reverses things so quickly. My new campaign that I'm doing is I go to schools and I hold up a big sign that says, masks are a lie, get them off our children. And a lot of conversations ensue. And I have students, I just had a student come up to me, and she was the leader of about 15 students. They were all behind her. And she was like, what are you, an idiot? And I was like, I'm sorry, I don't understand. What are you talking about? And she goes, masks save lives. And I was like, okay, first of all, just so you know, there's no absolute risk reduction from any randomized controlled trials for masks. So they absolutely don't work. And then second of all, are you aware that it's illegal to force mask anyone, including children? And you're actually taking part in an illegal scheme going on here at your school. And she was like, well, listen, I want to wear a mask. I said, that's fine.
Yes.
How about the freedom of those who don't want to wear a mask? Are you willing to subjugate them to your will? Are you willing to tell them that they can't use their constitutionally protected right to informed consent and the option to refuse? And that's when this loudmouth student didn't have anything to respond with. And by the way, I'm doing that in love the whole time. I'm not screaming at her. I'm not yelling at her. And there's something about a calm man or woman armed with the truth is so powerful, and you throw love in there and it's game over. So this has been, I'm now addicted to it. It just feels so good to turn the tables on this whole situation. And let's say worst case scenario, they do not let me in their restaurant, or they don't, they say you're an idiot, or they yell obscenities at me. That's on them, mm-hmm. because I've spoken the truth, and now they've got the horrible karma they're living with of having heard the truth and rejecting it. Mm-hmm. And I'll just finish up. I was in a board of supervisors meeting yesterday, and I said to this board, they were voting on whether to issue new vaccine mandates for all new city employees that they hire in San Diego. And I said, the moment that you impose your will on what another person can do with their body, the moment you cross that line, you've now done something evil. Mm. Like, this isn't just something objectively, you know, one person says it's okay, one person says it's not okay. Nope. In terms of God's law, in terms of the Constitution, in terms of our own law in this country, by you stepping over that line into another person's body, you are committing evil. Mm. And I told this board, if you vote to mandate this vaccine, you're committing evil. And you know what? They voted to make that vaccine mandate happen for the new employees. But I walked out of that room, that city government room, and I knew that I got through to them. I made them all squirm. And now in their brains, when they went to bed last night, they had to deal with the fact, is all that money I'm getting to do these votes, is it worth it? Or am I committing some evil that I will regret for the rest of eternity?
That is the part that gets me the most, because people have asked me, if I have to take a vaccine, which one do I take? If I have to do this, what do I do? And I'm like, we don't know. It's going to take us 5 to 10 years before we know really, truly what the outcomes are. And even the emerging data that we're seeing now, you look, I love the British Medical Journal. I feel like as far as journals go, they're more interested in telling the truth versus just taking big pharma money, you know? And new emerging data from the UK, the majority of people who are hospitalized for COVID are double vaccinated. You know, you look at the White House press secretary who just dances around these issues all of the time. She's been diagnosed with COVID. Guess what? She's double vaccinated. And so, and I love what Governor Ron DeSantis said the other day. He's like, how did we go from 2 weeks to flatten the curve to three jabs to keep your job? And it's like, and it's never going to stop. People keep saying, when is this going to be over? It's over when you say it's over. It is over when you say, no, I'm not going to take a booster every single year for a virus that is endemic. Corona, it's not like coronaviruses are a new thing. They have literally co-evolved with humanity for years and years and years. And we also know that due to viral interference, if you get vaccinated against influenza, your risk of getting COVID, your risk of getting all coronaviruses is higher. And I have people who reach out to me and they're like, my job is not only mandating that I take the COVID vaccine, but they're mandating that I also, at the same visit, take an influenza vaccine. And I'm like, have you asked them for their research papers that show that that's safe and effective? Like, ask these hard, hard questions. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. SomaVedic is the ultimate EMF protection. It is designed on the principle of controlled release of energy from precious and semi-precious stones. This allows you to create a coherent field covering more than 2,800 square feet. That's right. It forms a bubble of protection against electromagnetic frequencies, including 4G and 5G, Wi-Fi, and your cell phones, and it protects against oxidative stress and free radicals. The SomaVedic Ruby and the Vedic models are there to help repair cellular damage from non-native EMF exposure. It helps the body to repair itself from the harmful effects of EMF. The balancing effects reach a 100 feet radius in all directions. And that's not all. SomaVedic can also help to harmonize your water. SomaVedic creates structure in your water that helps it to benefit our bodies more. By creating hexagonal patterns, water is reorganized into its natural state, just like nature intended. You can head over to www.somavedic.com and use the code LKE to save 10% off. That's www.somavedic, that's SOMAVEDIC.com, and use the code LKE to save 10%. Be sure to shop using the code so that SomaVedic knows that we sent you. And now, let's get back to the show. So you made a couple films, and your newest one is called Beliefs and Stories. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So like 6 or 7 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with bladder cancer. They were told they were gonna have to remove her bladder, followed by chemo and radiation, cut her vagina in half, and she only had a 50% chance of survival. And instead, we went to Germany, treated it naturally with focused heat, IV nutrients, and ozone. And in 30 days, her cancer was completely gone. And she came back to the States, changed her nutrition, no cancer for 2 years. And I actually made a film about that experience called Cancer Can Be Killed. And after that film came out, parents called me and said, hey, wait a minute, my child's in remission from cancer. Why are they being forced into chemo for 2 to 4 years? And I said, well, that can't be right. So I made a film called Flipping the Script about parents fighting back against that system. And the problem there was that doctors would call Child Protective Services and say, take these children from these parents because these are bad parents because they're not doing what we said they should do. And so what we did is we called the bluff and we filmed it. And the parents had CPS come to their door. CPS asked what was going on. And the parents said, yeah, here's the data on what happens to children who do long-term chemo. They either die or they're maimed for life. And there are children out there right now who are not doing long-term chemo for one reason or another, and they're still alive. So if you want to take on the liability of killing my child, I want you to sign on the dotted line here and say you're willing to take it. And you know what? CPS every time backs up they go, no, we don't want to do this. Well, that film became popular. At that point, the government stepped in and they banned both of my films from Amazon Prime Videos. And they made a very public announcement and they got Wired Magazine, NBC News, and the Daily Mail to all say Jeff Weitzman is
a quack.
Yeah, he's a quack posing these cures that don't really work. He's a dangerous individual. We have to take his films off of Amazon. So then let's fast forward to a year and a half ago and my wife's cancer came roaring back. This time it took her life in 3 months and she died last July. And what we realized as she was dying, because she leveled up at the end of her life. And what we realized is that unless a person deals with the emotional issues underneath the cancer, all the holistic treatments in the world aren't going to change anything.
Nope.
And she knew she had emotional issues from childhood. She just couldn't figure out how to unhook from them. So after she passed away, I started the process of making this film, Beliefs and Stories, asking the question, what are the emotional spiritual issues that either lead to disease or healing? And I knew the fact that we were both sexually abused as children. And her way of responding was to just shove it down. Don't talk about it. Don't make waves. My response was never again. That will never happen in my circle. And I will destroy anybody who tries to sexually abuse anybody else. And I'm very vocal about it. And so that was my first sort of inkling, this understanding that, oh, okay. So talking about any abuse is really important. The second thing I realized in the film was I interviewed Dr. Cassie Huckabee, and she's here in San Diego. And Cassie said, you know, we all have a story in our lives, something that's happened to us, but it's our belief about that story that changes everything. And then Dr. Kelly Brogan said, the only real pathology in life is victimization. If we're victimized by something, we will suffer either emotional distress or physical sickness. And so then, you know, once I was clear on that, like, okay, I'm onto something here. Then it was just a matter of, okay, what is the work that we can do now to unhook from that childhood trauma? What is the information that if my wife had gotten this, she'd be alive today? And I really felt her spirit from beyond the grave with me in the process of this whole film, finding this answer, getting it, and then celebrating the fact that, oh my God, we're giving a gift to the world that no one has ever given before. It is so, this film is so magical. We're having film screenings now. And when you, and people cry throughout the film, and these are not tears of sadness. These are tears of healing.
Yeah, it's a release.
And when we get to the end of the film and everybody's sitting there, there is this love in the room. There's this acceptance in the room, this peace. And inevitably we have like a question and answer session and nobody has any questions. They just want to share experiences. Like, oh my God, when I saw this in the film, I felt this and I realized this. And it's just, they're magical, these screenings. So we're doing that now all over the country. Health Freedom for Humanity is having screenings of this film in every state. We're doing one in Arizona on November 20th. We're going to do one in Los Angeles in December. And And then we'll just keep going all over the place.
So what did you learn? How do we actually unhook from all of our adverse childhood experiences, which follow us for life?
Yeah, we have to, I have to feel all the feelings that I never felt. Mm-hmm. And I have to be a witness for those feelings, express them all. Then I have to give up my idea of what I thought life was supposed to be. I have to give up the trauma response I came up with to solve this riddle. In my wife's case, her trauma response solving the riddle was, I'll just work harder. I will be the best school teacher ever. I will devote my life to it and I'll be a workaholic and that will save me. She was not able to give that up. And so that took her down. So again, back to me. Give up what I thought life was supposed to be, give up my trauma response and solving the riddles, come to that place, that existential place in the universe of where I am alone with God and nobody can save me. Mm. Now, if I can sit there and really feel the pain and loneliness of that, there is nothing anybody can take from me. I am now a completely sovereign human being walking this earth as a spirit being, and nothing has any power over me anymore. So for me to reduce that power, I had to feel it. And then I had to reframe it in the sense of, oh, wow, no, I'm actually in control now of everything that's going on. And the work with my father sexually abusing me, I had to go into a meditative state, go right back to when I was 5 years old, to the moment of the abuse. And when he walked in the door to my bedroom, I had to push him out of the bedroom and say, you do not need to be here. I know you're afraid. I know you think you need to do this to little Jeff, but you do not need to. Go deal with your life and yourself. And I'm going to usher you out of the room right now. Then I would shut the door and then I would get on the bed with little Jeff and I would hold him and do that reframing process of I'm in charge now. Those people that abused you, they are no longer in charge. And since that time, my father's passed away about 7 years ago. I've had experiences in yoga at the end during Shavasana, where my father came back to visit me almost like from heaven in his heavenly state. And we reconnected and we rebonded and, you know, we became teammates again. So it is possible. It's really just being curious, wanting to do the work. And then guess what? God just gets people in your life that show you how to do the next step to get closer to that place of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think what you just said is so profound because most of the time people are simply not willing to do the work. And I think for me, hearing the words that you just spoke come out of the mouth of a man is so powerful because I think women can allow themselves much more vulnerability, but you just were extraordinarily vulnerable with us. And it is a reflection of the fact that you've actually gotten to the root emotional cause and truly forgiven your situation and, you know, truly forgiving your father. If he's coming and visiting you and has, you know, given you that inclination of, you know, I did that thing because I was in this dark space and I thought it was the only thing I could do. That's so, I mean, that touches my heart on a very, very deep level. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Well, and thank you. And I want to say, I apologize for not being real emotional as I describe it here. Mm-hmm. But when people watch the film Beliefs and Stories, I actually get interviewed in that film and I break down uncontrollably. And so people can get the emotion there.
Yeah. But I think the fact that you're able to turn the emotion on and off, you can feel the feels when you want to feel the feels, or you can come here and have a very pointed conversation about, you know, my wife recently died. I was sexually abused as a child. But that's a reflection that you have done the hard work. And I think what you said was so beautiful. Like, you have to go back to those times where you were the most hurt and remind yourself it's not your fault. This is what was going on. I know, I remember my parents got divorced when I was really young. And I remember one time my mom and I were at our beach house and I ripped the sheets off of the bed in frustration of just like what's happening in my life. And I remember my mom standing in the doorway and she's sobbing and she's like, why did you pull the sheets off of the bed? Well, I carried around guilt and regret and shame and all of this that I had made the situation worse. And somebody then told me, like you said, God puts people in your life for a reason. Somebody said, imagine now that you walked in to a room where a little six-year-old child had gotten so frustrated by the fact that her parents were getting divorced and her life was in upheaval, and she ripped the sheets off of the bed. How would you respond? And I was just like, oh my gosh, I would rush to her and say, you are doing just fine. I understand your frustration. This is the worst thing that has ever happened to you. Do you want to beat up some pillows next? Like, what's going to help you feel better and get the emotions out? And since then, I haven't felt guilt or shame or regret. I was simply a six-year-old child feeling my feelings and realizing that I needed to have some sort of physical outlet for what was going on. But to look back on it now and just go like, you were so young and so innocent and your world got rocked. Your world completely got rocked. So one of the questions that you sent over that you said you'd like to talk about addiction and dependency and codependency. And so I have been working with someone I'm very close to who is dealing with addiction, and it's been a really bumpy, bumpy road. And I'd be interested to know, like, I told her the only thing you can pour into this addiction is God. That's it. That's the only thing that's going to fill up that bucket of emptiness that you feel. Talk to us about addiction, codependency, and how we can leave them behind.
Well, you know, every addict has something underneath that is causing them to be addicted. Mm-hmm. All right. And the trick in recovery programs is to find that thing. I think I was 16 years in recovery before I got my first inkling of what that bottom line feeling was. And for me, the bottom line feeling was, I'm effed. There is something wrong with me. I will never be fixed. This whole life I'm living is only going to go down. There's no end to how bad this life is going to get. And part of me said, Lindsay, that's not correct. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely false. Where am I getting that information? Then it took me about another year to actually calm down enough to realize that every time that life didn't turn out the way I thought it was supposed to be, I immediately judged myself as effed. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I might as well go act out or do my addiction or, you know, stay asleep or you know, then go into dependency, depend on someone else because I'm not enough. Mm-hmm. Once I got past that whole that mental state, really, that whatever that being inside me that says life has to turn out this way, otherwise you're effed, I started distrusting that. The moment I started distrusting that voice is the moment I started getting well, like really well, like, oh my God, not only is today going to be a great day, but everything that happens is here for my benefit. It's an opportunity. Whatever's happening is God just taking me through my next thing. Mm-hmm. But for so long, I could not get past that element of, you know, I'm screwed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I love the fact that you're giving yourself permission you know, to feel these irrational feelings, quote unquote, irrational feelings of your child ripping the sheets off the bed. Because that's another problem addicts have, is communicating with their child self and communicating from the perspective of, hey, anything you feel is okay. Because typically addicts want to control the feelings, whatever's going on. And so there's a quick rush to judgment to say, that wasn't a rational feeling. No, you can't feel that. But I feel, you know, scared right now. No, don't be scared. This isn't a scary situation, whatever. And so that's part of the healing process too, is reclaiming that relationship with all of us, you know, not just our cynical adult self, but also, you know, the loving parent, the higher self, the child self. And when I say child self, I mean the 16-year-old, the 12-year-old, the 8-year-old, the 2-year-old, they've all got feelings and they're all in there. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do is because we had arrested development when we were kids. No one was there to perfectly mirror us for who we were. And so now we can do that work of mirroring those feelings back. But it takes that sensitivity to be able to say, do I really have to feel this right now? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to feel scared. I don't want to feel angry, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been my journey with that regard. I want to go to one more journey that's been interesting that defied all logic for me. When my wife died, I got into a cancer support group with other spouses who had lost their spouses. And, you know, it was great to get that loving support right after my wife died. But within 2 months, I kept hearing this recurring theme of life's a shit sandwich. You take another bite out of it every day and then you die. And I was like, there's got to be something more to that, more mm-hmm. than that. How about I take responsibility for all of who I am that I've never taken responsibility for because I used my wife as a coping mechanism. And how about I grow up, really grow up for the first time right now? That was my choice. And it was brutal. And I felt so alone and so lonely. And I left that support group. But I'm sitting with you today, a free man, because I'm able to be in that place of I've taken responsibility for all my demons, mm-hmm. all the stuff that rushed back in from childhood. And I've said, I am now in control of this stuff. It's not in control of me. I'm the one who reframes it. You know, I'm the one who surrenders to God every day and doesn't try to control life, but just goes with the flow. So that's the other journey, you know, I've been on that's been so helpful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it is astonishing if you truly allow yourself to feel your emotions and intentionally work on how do I mirror myself? How do I find the best versions of myself at every stage of my life? It's very powerful.
Maybe the best version of yourself doesn't look so best version. Maybe right. It looks like you crying and hiding your head under the covers and just yes. feeling those feelings.
Well, or like me, I just went through a breakup and a move, and I got here one day in my new house, and I was like, today is a day where I'm going to sleep, and that's it. And I laid in bed. I got up around 9:30, you know, fed the cat, went back to bed and called a friend and was like, hey, do you happen to have any massage appointments? And that was all I did. You know, I got up, I fed the cat, I went back to bed, I got a massage, I came back, I went back to bed. But that was truly me showing up for myself and saying like, this is what you need right now. So I want to go back to talking about health freedom as we come to a close. I think one of the biggest things that is so confusing right now is for those of us who see that this is a manipulation of Big Pharma and the government and Big Pharma outright owning the media, They spend more, listeners, please do not let this go like to the wayside. big pharmaceutical companies spend 3, 5, 10 times as much on their marketing budget that they do on research. They spend more money purchasing the media narrative than they do in ensuring that the drugs that they are encouraging every single man, woman, and child to take are safe and effective. It makes my blood boil. One of the things that's so confusing is what is actually going on? Like, what is that? Why do you feel this incessant need to force me to do something against my will? You know, what is happening? I had a conversation with a friend the other day, and I was like, wait a minute, with all these nurses and physicians and police officers that are quitting their jobs, military resignations, this and that, I was like, are they trying to break the back of the medical system as well as the military, as well as our police force? And if they are, why? And who are they? You know, who are they? So what do you think is actually happening here?
I think it's very difficult for the common man and woman to understand the sociopathic personality. Mm. You know, the people at the top that get to the top, they get there by burning a lot of bridges and by not having quote unquote feelings for other people and how stuff is going to affect them. They really think differently. Mm. You know, they think in terms of this is where I have to get to and I'm terrified. They're afraid. You know, mm-hmm. all the CEOs of these corporations, all the people at the very top stuff, they're terrified in life. They live their life in fear. They don't live their life in love. They live their life in fear. And that fear drives them to make more money. And there's never enough money for them ever. But that quest for money alleviates that fear just enough for them to keep staying on that addictive train of being sociopaths and narcissists and unable to feel what other people feel. So if everybody was educated properly in school, what a narcissist is, what a sociopath is, and how you treat that, how you quarantine those people and don't let them take advantage of your life, we'd all be fine. Mm-hmm. But the problem is nobody understands how the real world works. I had to go out in the real world and figure out what it was like. And the first job I did, you know, the first creative pursuit was as an actor. And then I realized, oh, it's not about talent. It's about the slave system and whoever wants to be a part of the cult and who they're willing to sleep with and do drugs with. Okay, I'm going to get out of acting. So then I get in the music business. So then the music business, oh, it's all about money. It's they pay the radio stations to play everything that goes on the radio. Nobody's making a choice about we're playing the song because it's good. No, they're playing that song because it's being paid to be played. And so as I got underneath everything and realized that everything in society functions as a cult, we have no legal system that does justice at all. It's a completely fraudulent legal system. That's when my eyes opened up to the fact that, oh, I've got to get out of this cult. I have to get out of this slave system. And there's actually a way to do it. And now a lot of us are pulling ourselves out, pulling ourselves away from government, getting in the private sector, protecting ourselves legally so the government cannot touch us. And, you know, it's hard also for people to think, like, there are no safety studies for any of these drugs. There are no safety studies for 5G. And what they do is they do a magical sleight of hand. So they do a quote unquote safety study, but it's an industry funded safety study. So when people say, I believe in science, I say, well, which science? Industry-funded science or real science?
Yep.
And I interviewed a doctor and he told me all the ways they can fudge these studies they do. Like they only show you 50% of the results and the other 50 they toss out. They show relative risk reduction rather than absolute risk reduction. I mean, it's so ludicrous.
It's absolutely ludicrous because, you know, if you've read David Michael's book, The Triumph of Doubt, you know, it's like, who said that 2 glasses of wine a day was safe? Wine manufacturers. Who said that high fructose corn syrup is no different than cane sugar? The sugar industry said that. Who said that traumatic head injuries had no problem? The NFL said that. All of these studies were completely funded by industry. Industry hired the scientists to create the data that they wanted. The tobacco industry wrote the book on it and how to make it happen. OxyContin. I mean, who said OxyContin was safe and non-addictive? Well, it started with Purdue Pharma, and guess what? They even convinced the FDA to believe it and put it on the label, even though they had zero evidence. The studies on OxyContin that had been done at that time, the patients had been on the drug for a maximum of 3 days. Of course it's non-addicting if you only give the patient a 3-day supply. You know, it's like, it's just astonishing that you can buy science, that you can buy it like that, but you absolutely can. You always have to look at who is funding the trials.
And Lindsay, you hear it so often from people. When you tell them that we're not getting the straight story from doctors, they say, come on, you believe every doctor is in on this supposed conspiracy theory you're telling about? And I just say, no, not at all. If doctors don't do what they're told, they lose their license.
Right. It all goes back to Dr. Flexner, who wrote the modern interpretation of what education for physicians and ultimately pharmacists and nurses and respiratory therapists and all of it. Dr. Flexner said, this is the way medicine is going to be taught. It's all going to be taught about, like, you have this disease, you use a pill. And they systematically wiped out medical schools that actually looked at prevention and actually looked at natural remedies and this and that. It's not necessarily that everybody is in on the conspiracy. It's like you said, we just didn't realize we were joining a cult. We didn't realize that that's what we were doing, where if you step out of line and say, hey, you know, I mean, I've had doctors so many times, I'll call them, hey, your patient's been on a proton pump inhibitor for a year, it's time to discontinue that. And they're like, no, the patient's fine. And it's like, no, like literally long term, we know that this is destroying your microbiome, destroying your bone health, this and that. And they're just like, it's fine. And, you know, even I think about the failings of big pharma in my own life. I remember a drug that came out. It was a Me Too drug of Vioxx. Vioxx, huge scandalous drug. They knew that drug caused heart attacks. They knew it. And there was a Me Too drug called Bextra. I don't remember the generic name. Valdecoxib or something. That's Vioxx. Anyways, Bextra comes to the market. Guess what? My mom is a nurse. She works in outpatient surgery. And so they're always on the lookout for new pain medicines. So guess who took this drug that was removed from the market less than a year or two after it came out because it causes cardiovascular disease? My like 12 and 15 year old self. That is criminal. It is criminal that people are able to send drug reps who aren't medical professionals, they're just salespeople, and they're handing out drugs that are extremely dangerous and not very well researched, and they find their way into the hands of children, they find their way into the hands of vulnerable populations, etc. I could talk to you.
The people that are practicing medicine right now are politicians and drug companies. Uh-huh. They're all practicing medicine without a license.
Uh-huh. Yep.
But what do the health departments do? Oh, they try to close down the people that are offering healing technologies or infusions that could actually help people. Uh-huh. So, I mean, you know, it's easy. We could sue all these people if we had a legitimate court, which we don't. But this at least helps people to understand and connect the dots. Uh-huh. And once they realize, oh, this is not Grey's Anatomy, this is not TV, TV is a complete farce. Mm-hmm. Once they get that, then they can start putting the pieces together. And then it's just work. It's just work for us to build the new earth, to build the new relationships with people that actually do the things they're supposed to do.
Oh, I love it so much. I could talk to you all day long. Everybody go check out healthfreedomforhumanity.org. Please go find a screening of Jeff's new movie in.
Well, also they can see it on Vimeo on demand and soon iTunes and Google Play, and it's called Beliefs and Stories, and they find it at beliefsandstories.com.
Oh, I love that so much. Jeff Weitzman, thank you so much for coming in today and being a guest on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
I enjoyed it. Thank you, Lindsay.
The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag at Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.